Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
The time in Accra is 7:05 and in Juba it's 10:05. Welcome to Africa Link. I am Abubakar Jallo, coming to you from Bonn, Germany. In the next 25 minutes, renewed fighting erupts between South Sudanese government troops and former rebels loyal to the vice president.
Civilians are targeted. My understanding, what I see, what I hear from Juba, the probability that it escalates into a full-scale war are much higher than that it will be stabilized.
Rwanda is to host this year's African Union's 27th summit, and challenging moment for Zimbabwe after police arrest dozens of people behind last week's attempts to shut down the country.
They are not going to stop until government starts listening and responding on the levels of corruption that have reached alarming levels, and also act on issues of poverty and injustices.
Stay tuned to this edition of Africa Link.
Top story.
Renewed fighting erupted this morning in South Sudan's capital, Juba. Government troops loyal to President Salva Kiir and rebels with allegiance to Vice President Riek Machar engaged in fierce battle that began last Thursday. Officials at the government office have put the death toll to 270, and President Kiir has called for peace and calm. Witnesses said most of the fighting took place in the Jebel neighborhood where Machar has his residence. DW's Patricia Horn is currently in Juba and has been describing the situation there to my colleague Eunice Wanjiru.
Yeah, well, there's still a lot of shooting around Juba at this moment, shooting and explosions around Juba, also helicopters flying over the city. Thousands of civilians took shelter on the UN bases, and the UN mission itself confirmed that some mortars fell on their sites. The airport is closed at the moment. Roads are also closed. There's no cars driving around except the military vehicle. And yeah, so still shooting at the moment, and there's a really big risk of an escalation and a new bloodbath in South Sudan.
South Sudan's government claims to be in full control of the capital. Can you confirm that?
The thing is that, it, as I was saying, it's impossible to move around at the moment. So I cannot go and check what's actually the situation on the ground. I just have accounts from people that I speak with on the phone in different areas of the city. In some areas, there's also a big presence of the forces from the opposition. And yeah, that's also what the spokesperson from the army told me when I spoke to him, is that the situation was under control. But looking at things now in Juba, it seems really, really unlikely.
So what can you tell us about the casualties?
Well, there was no official statement about that. Even after the fighting on Friday, different sources are talking about more than 100 soldiers who lost their lives. According to a government person that Reuters spoke with, there would even be almost 300 dead. That's a possibility, like it might even be higher because some civilians were also killed.
And do we know the reason behind this renewed fighting?
The tensions have been high for quite a while. I mean, Riek Machar came back in April in Juba. He was reintegrated in the government of transition as a vice president, but we now have two armies who have been fighting for 30 months against each other, living in the same city. They both have weapons, and they don't trust each other. So it didn't take much to trigger a new conflict.
DW's Patricia Huang in Juba. Now, the Secretary General of the United Nations, Ban Ki-moon, said he was shocked and appalled by the fighting and called on both sides to stop the violence. South Sudan has seen more fighting than peace since winning independence from Sudan in July 2011. Peter Schumann is the former director of the UN mission to Sudan and has been speaking to Eunice Wanjiru.
There are reports, I don't know if they are confirmed, that forces from outside Juba are advancing towards the capital. We had a similar thing in December 2013. Civilians are targeted. because they are part of a particular ethnic group aligned to political groups, either from the opposition, Riek Machar, or the government, Salva Kiir, or other groups. So the similarities are so scary, because we now know what happened after December 2013. And I think we are now sort of on a watershed. Will it really escalate again? And my understanding, what I see, what I hear from Juba, the probability that it escalates into a full-scale war are much higher than that it will be stabilized.
Each side claims to have been attacked by the other, and no one has taken responsibility so far. Does this mean that the two leaders need a third party?
Well, we have seen over the last 2 years that a third party engagement has a very limited possibility to really stop the fighting. The way the fighting started, this whole incident around the check post, but then the immediate escalation beyond the check post, and then I think very important, the inability of Salva Kiir, Riek Machar, and the second vice president, James Wani-Igga, who happened to be together in one room, to give very clear orders and stop the fighting. This leaves only one conclusion. They are not in charge of those who are really fighting. And this is sort of at the heart of the matter. According to the peace agreement or the cessation of hostility agreement, Juba was supposed to be a demilitarized zone. To bring Riek Machar to Juba resulted in basically what you could call an arms race. Each side escalated the numbers of how many troops they should bring, which basically shows us that there is no confidence between the two. There is only a military balance, and this balance seems to be tipping.
So what do you think could be done to bring the country back to normalcy?
I think it needs a very radical approach. Neither Riek Machar nor Salva Kiir have demonstrated that they can bring stability back to the country. Both of them have to leave the arena, and we need fresh leadership. We need a completely new setup in South Sudan.
Peter Schumann, former director of UN mission in Sudan.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
Now, Rwanda will, for the first time, host the African Union Summit, which brings together heads of state, commissioners, as well as participants from different organs of the body. The meetings will discuss several issues under the theme 2016 African Year of Human Rights, with particular focus on the rights of women. They will also elect a new chairperson of the AU, replacing South African Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma. DW's Nazra Bishumba is in Kigali and has more.
Ever since Rwanda was chosen to host this year's summit, the government and the private sector went to work. First, the construction of the Kigali Convention Center, which had stalled since 2009, was set in motion. The center, which was recently inaugurated by President Paul Kagame, cost $300 million. It has a conference hall that can host more than 5,000 people and a five-star hotel, making it one of the biggest in the region. As the first participants, who will mostly be here for the rest of the week, begin to fly in, Rwandans are excited to host the biggest summit in Africa after hosting the recent Africa Cup of Nations tournament. Business enterprises and tourism operators have been working hard to put their services on international standards, while new social and leisure facilities have been renovating their places of business, all in anticipation of the visitors. Collins Mwai is a local media practitioner, and he told DW why Rwandans are excited.
There is attendance of about 35 heads of states that has been confirmed so far. And then we have business leaders from all across the continent. This means also quite a number of opportunities for members in the private sector. It will also serve to further promote the government's ambition of promoting Rwanda as a conference hub, as an exhibition hub.
Gad Muneza is a security guard at one of the telecommunication companies in Kigali. He told DW why this AU summit is important to Rwandans.
This is an opportunity to learn from others, but also teach them some lessons from the Rwandan journey. I'm happy to have been this country before and after the genocide, and I now have something positive to tell my children.
The summit will also be an opportunity for the heads of state to launch the African passport, whose main aim is to promote and facilitate free movement of people goods and services across the continent. Symbolically, the ceremony will also see African heads of state receive the passport. Also on the agenda are elections of the African Union chairperson, the deputy chairperson, and several commissioners to replace those who have completed their mandate. The summit will also see the leaders and their ministers of finance discuss how Africa can finance itself on a number of initiatives and programs of the African Union.
Nasra Bishumba reporting from Kigali. Street protests, work boycotts and internet activism are on the rise in Zimbabwe. A shutdown strike last week closed many businesses, shops and schools, and public transport and some government departments also ceased to function. Now the police have carried out some arrests of some of the protesters behind the shutdown. Zimbabwe is suffering from crushing economic woes and food shortages. My colleague Fred Muvunyi spoke to DW's Privilege Mushanye in Harare and asked him about the situation after the shutdown.
The situation has returned to normal. Business has returned to normal, but you find that there were several people that were arrested from different parts of Zimbabwe, from different cities, and these are facing charges of public violence and various other charges under the Zimbabwean laws. We have the courts at the moment, they are seized with those cases, and the organization, the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, is currently representing several people. More than 100 of them are facing various charges, and they are being represented by lawyers from the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights. And these charges are stemming from the demonstrations that happened since last week, including the shutdown that happened on Wednesday.
There were reports that the founder of the internet movement, #ThisFag, Pastor Evans Mawarire, was to be arrested. What can you tell us about his fate?
Pastor Evans Mawarire, there were threats to arrest him, but he is still free. But over the weekend, there were reports that there are some men who tried to abduct him, and he has since released a video to that effect, saying that some men tried to abduct him at his home. At the moment, there is also prospects of another shutdown that may come this week.
And what impact this shutdown have on the country?
Looking at what the Revenue Authority and also the reports that are coming out in the local media, it is being said that the Revenue Authority has also indicated that they lost some revenue, because every day they have to collect value-added tax. And since then, you find that the shops were closed on the day that the shutdown was held on Wednesday.
And finally, what is the expectation of the people now after this shutdown?
If you look on the side of the people while we are leading the movement, they are looking forward to put pressure and uphold the momentum, because what they are saying that they are not going to stop until government starts listening and responding to the issues that they are raising. Because the issues that they are raising are that, you know, government must act on the levels of corruption that have reached alarming levels, and also act on issues of poverty and injustices that are happening in the country.
DW's Privilege Mushanye in Harare. Now, the story of thousands of Africans seeking to make the dangerous crossings over the Mediterranean to Europe in this week's Learning by Air.
Deutsche Welle, Learning by Ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hello and welcome to Learning by Ear. This is the fifth episode of our radio drama called The Promised Land, a story of African migration to Europe. In the previous episode, Farahani came up with the idea of sneaking into Europe on the boat belonging to Sule's father, who has been a fisherman all his life. Linda, on the other hand, is already in transit on her way to start university. She had a bit of a culture shock on arriving in Europe, and right now, with only a few minutes left to catch her flight, she's still trying to get to the departure gate. Will she make it in time? Let's find out in today's episode called Is My Skin My Sin? We'll join Linda first of all and pick up the story as she goes through the metal detector at the security control.
Hey, go back again and empty whatever is in your pockets. Coins, rings, necklaces. Sir, please.
Final call for Miss Linda Baraga.
That's my name they're calling, please.
Then what are you waiting for? Go on, go.
God help me, please. Please, I can't miss my flight. I can't.
Linda rushes to her departure gate. Incredibly, her prayers have been answered. She gets there just in time. And as she sits down, guess who else she sees on the flight? It's Florence. What a relief. Linda can't wait to tell her new friend about her nightmare in the transit airport. But before we hear what Florence has to say about it, let's join Farahani and Sule at the harbour, where they're telling Sule's father, Hamad, about their plan.
There's really no need to worry, Mr. Hamad. When we land in Europe and start working there, we'll be able to buy you a better boat. The kind with an engine that you can even sleep inside when it rains. You know the ones that...
Sule, do you and your friend have no shame at all? That you come to me like this and ask me to give away our family's only source of livelihood? And for what? A dream of going to the white man's land? What is it that our young people think they see in Europe?
Farahani, I warned you this wouldn't work with my dad.
Stop talking when I'm talking. Have you forgotten your manners as well? Is this the kind of thing you learn from Europe? Now you listen to me and listen very carefully. I have been at sea since I was 12 years old. This is not a playground and my boat is not a toy. Get out of my sight, the pair of you.
Mr. Hamad, maybe I didn't explain to you clearly the reason why...
Out! Get out before I lash your backs. Instead of looking for jobs and finding women to marry and have children, you're wasting your time and your youth just dreaming about Europe and building castles in the sea.
In the air. You got it wrong, Mr. Hamad. It's building castles in the air, not in the sea.
Farahani leaves Sule's father at the harbour. He feels not angry, but frustrated. Is this the end of his dreams of going to Europe? But let's turn now to Linda and Florence, who after a short flight have arrived at their final destination. Linda had to go through another thorough clearance process at immigration before being allowed to enter the country. But now Florence has invited her to sit and have a nice cup of tea.
Florence, I can't believe what I've just been through. This trip has been absolute hell. I never imagined it would be this way. People are so unfriendly, and they don't seem to trust me or even want to speak to me.
Welcome to the real Europe. You know, I had an African friend here who used to say, "My skin is my sin."
What does that mean?
That it's because of our skin color that we are treated like this. Of course, not everyone here is a racist. If they were, I wouldn't have married a European. Well, I'm so sorry you had such a bad experience on your very first day. But, you know, people here are more scared these days because of the risk of terrorism. And even if that weren't the case, they're not nearly as friendly as people are back home. You'll have to get used to that.
Flo, thank you so much for your advice. Look, I don't want to take advantage, but might it be possible for me to use your phone very quickly? I just need to send my parents a text and let them know I've arrived safely. I know they must be worried.
No problem. Go ahead and call them. I'm sure they'll be happy to hear your voice.
Thank you, Flo. You're so kind.
Hello?
Dad, it's me, Linda.
Ah, Linda. Oh, thank God. How are you?
I'm fine, Dad.
How was your journey? And whose number is this?
I'm calling from a friend's phone. The journey wasn't so easy. And the people here really aren't very friendly. But Europe looks beautiful.
Hello? Linda, I can't hear you clearly. Where are you calling me from?
Sorry, Dad, I have to go, but please tell Mom I got here safely. I miss you.
Hello?
Bye.
Hello? Linda, are you there?
Thank you, Flo. My parents must be relieved to know I got here safely.
Linda, let me give you a piece of advice. Never tell people back home that things are tough here or that you're having difficulties. No matter what you go through, don't ever tell them the truth.
Why ever not, Florence? These are my parents. They need to know what's happening in my life.
Just remember what I said. You'll work it out yourself soon enough. Oh, I have to go. My driver is here already. Here. Here's 20 euros to pay for the tea. You can keep the change, okay?
Thank you.
Now, remember, you have my telephone number, so if you ever need anything, just give me a call. It was great to meet you, Linda. Bye-bye and take care.
Bye-bye.
Linda watches Florence wheel her luggage towards the car park. And for the first time ever in her life, she feels scared. Scared and lonely. She looks around, hoping to see a familiar face, but all the faces here are foreign. She pays for the tea and goes to the airport train station, where she catches the train to her university. Let's leave Linda now as she embarks on her new life and find out what's been going on with Farahani back in North Africa. After Sule's father, Hamad, refused to lend him his boat, Farahani decided to join some other migrants who were trying to get to Europe in a small, overcrowded boat of their own. But this time, he kept his decision secret. He hasn't even told his best friend Sule about his plans. Now, after many days at sea, Farahani and the others have managed to get within a few miles of the European coast.
We are looking for the gas. Please remain calm. Do not jump into the water. Our officers will be escorting you from this point on.
Where are you taking us? We want to go to Europe. We know we are nearly there. We can even see the coast from here.
We intercepted this boat in African territorial waters, so we shall be returning you there safely as soon as we have identified exactly where you have come from.
We don't want to go back. We have no papers. We are stateless.
Well, we'll see about that. All I know right now is that you are trying to cross into Europe illegally. And our duty is to make sure that our borders remain secure. Please cooperate with these officers for your own safety.
Nah, I'm not going back. I'm not going back. You can't make me.
He's jumped off the boat. Quick, get him out. The waves are too strong. He's drowning. Have you got him? Is he all right? Okay. Now listen carefully. We don't want anyone to get hurt. So please, all of you, remain calm. Stay on the boat and all will be well.
So Farahani is rescued from the sea by the lifeguards and sent back to Africa against his will. But he still hasn't abandoned his dream. What will he do next? Keep listening and you'll find out. We've reached the end of the fifth episode of this radio drama series, The Promised Land, a story focusing on African migration to Europe. Tune in to the next episode to see how Linda tackles the challenges of studying in Europe. Meanwhile, do join us to discuss the issue of racism and intolerance on our Facebook page, facebook.com/dw.lbe. Goodbye for now.
And before we leave you, a quick reminder of the main stories. Renewed fighting erupted in South Sudan this morning, only 2 months after President Salva Kiir and his deputy Riek Machar formed a unity government to end the 2-year civil war. And in Zimbabwe, police have arrested dozens of people allegedly behind last week's shutdown protest. Some news coming in. The Somali Islamist militant group Al-Shabaab have rammed a car packed with explosives into an army base southwest of the capital, Mogadishu. The military said at least 10 soldiers were killed. That's all we had time for. To respond to any of these stories, send us either a text message to +491609575910 and email to feedback.africa@dw.com, or you can also send us a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110 Bonn, Germany. My name is Abubakar Jallo and it's been a pleasure to be with you. Until tomorrow, have a great week. Bye now.